Today's topic is going to be on liquid crystals, which I know is something that we have discussed briefly in past quarters. Some of you might remember at some point along the way, we may have talked about micelles even. And of course, the morning section, we talked about micelles briefly there. I want to talk a little bit about the different classes of liquid crystals, a little bit about the history of how liquid crystals were discovered. Won't get into synthesis at all, but I want to talk about the different liquid crystal forms, because there is certainly more than one major class of liquid crystals. So first, a little story about the discovery of liquid crystals. One of the earliest ones discovered was this compound. Because the other one is about to run out of power. Instead of doing half my lecture in one place and half of it another, I figured I'd do it all just in one place here.
So, are you doing notes on this lecture?
I'm going to be doing the same lecture tomorrow, and I'm going to take pictures of what I'm doing right now anyways to post for today's lecture.
So to save power, you just leave it off.
That's off. So this is the compound cholesteromyristate. This is the molecule cholesterol that has been attached to a carboxylic acid that is a 14-carbon carboxylic acid. So morning section, we've already seen both of these molecules separately. This cholesteromyristate had very unusual behavior, at least unusual back in the 1800s, because it had the appearance of having two different melting points. So normally when we do melting, we could observe melting in two different ways. One, we could examine a structure under a microscope and see the fact that as we go from a solid to liquid, there's a different change in material. We could also do analysis in terms of temperature versus heat that's added to a substance. You might remember from your Chem 1A days that if you have a solid and you add energy to it, as it's a solid, there will essentially be a linear relationship based on heat capacity between how much energy is added and the temperature of that solid. At some point, we'll go through a phase transition from solid to liquid. If you're carefully adding heat during that time, the phase transition itself requires energy. A temperature change does not occur while you're at that point, so we'll level out here until you've fully melted, and then you have a liquid which is going to rise in temperature. So this is what should be expected. Except for cholesteromyristate, here's what we get. That if you look at the energy added versus the temperature, you do start out with a solid. You then go through a transition. And this is what confused them, because that material was not fully a liquid. And we'll talk about part of the way that we know that it was not. So it transitioned into something that was not really a liquid, and underwent yet another transition to a true liquid, which would then be heated up. So one of the observations that made researchers back then think something strange was going on was the fact that it appears to have two melting points. The other thing that was strange is what this did look like under a microscope. So let's go back to Chem 12A again and remind ourselves about optical rotation. That's this property that chiral materials have. Well, in general, that's just one form of what's known as optical anisotropy. Which is a phenomenon in which light travels differently depending on the pathway it takes through a material. There's different forms of optical anisotropy. For example, if any of you have ever played with samples of calcite, that's the famous doubling stone. You look through it, it appears like you've got a mirror image. Or you can have what makes it look like an image is transmitted through this stone. Have any of you ever seen that? Very clear or white-looking material. You'll put it down on a picture, and it looks like the picture is right on top of that crystal that you just put on it. None of you ever seen it? I'll bring some in on Wednesday so you can see what it looks like. So optical anisotropy is this idea that you can have differences in the way that light travels through a substance, which you can notice when you look at a substance through crossed polarizers. So let me just re-explain briefly what the idea behind crossed polarizers is. It's this idea that you have some kind of light source that initially is going to give off light that's traveling in all directions, but also in all orientations relative to that light beam. So in other words, remember that light is really just a wave, or can be represented as a wave that has both a magnetic and an electric field to them that are perpendicular to each other. Even though those fields are perpendicular to each other, they can then be arbitrarily arranged relative to some reference point. In other words, when the light comes out, maybe it's wiggling up and down this way, or at an angle, or flat, or at all of them at the same time, because it's an unorganized light source. You then put it through a polarizer. Which will only allow light traveling in one way to pass through it. If you were then to pass the light through a perpendicularly arranged polarizer, you won't get any light through unless somehow the light is twisted in between the two polarizers, because if you are blocking light, let's say, so that it only could oscillate in the vertical orientation, but then you pass it through one of these horizontal polarizers, the light simply gets blocked. Unless you turn the polarizer to match, and then that would allow the light to pass through, or unless in between the two polarizers you had some kind of optical activity. And when we were talking about stereochemistry, we could change the angle between the two polarizers, and that would be the optical rotation, from which, if you know the path length and the concentration, you could calculate this thing called specific rotation. So no light passes through the second polarizer. Or I'll say it this way, no light passes through orthogonal polarizers unless a sample twists the light in between. So we put the sample in between, and then light can change directions. Now, this kind of behavior was known even back at that time through crystalline samples. So you take different rock samples, for example, make very thin slices of those rocks. You can have some idea about the type of crystals that form, the patterns that form, by looking under polarized light microscopy, And it was thought that because of the structure of these solids, the crystalline structure, that it caused this optical anisotropy that could be measured under polarized microscopy. So you get all these really interesting, pretty-looking patterns of light through a solid because of the arrangement of atoms that you have. Well, here's the other piece of evidence to go along with the second melting point that gave people a bit of pause. Because this liquid sample, or this thing that seemed to have a second melting point, exhibited some of these same types of patterns of light with the liquid-looking sample that you'd normally expect from something that was solid. And let me come back to this idea of anisotropy. A liquid, a true liquid, has absolutely no order to it. So in a true liquid that's not chiral, so doesn't have the same anisotropy to it, liquid samples shouldn't cause anything to happen when you put it in between cross polarizers. So because something happens when you take this apparently liquid sample and put it between cross polarizers, the thought was, well, there must be something different about the structure of this quote-unquote liquid. Let me write a little bit of what I just said down. Normally, only chiral liquids are solids such as minerals. With a particular structural arrangement. Display any patterns using PLM. Liquids, since they are normally isotropic, which means structureless, shouldn't show up with any particular patterns under PLM. There's this example molecule that we're working on. The unusual behavior it has is twofold. One, when melting it carefully, it appears to go through two separate melting transitions. During this middle transition, it's that middle form that appears to have some kind of activity under polarized light microscopy. Polarized light microscopy is exactly this type of thing involving cross polarizers. Except unlike what we did back in Chem 12A when we discussed this topic, we're not simply looking for when the light has a maximum or minimum as you're twisting these polarizers. Because that's how optical rotation is measured. You find out where, if you have the cross polarizers, you have complete darkness. Find out what angle it takes to get to complete blindness, which that's always a fixed angle, but find out how that compares to the original polarizer. You know how much light is twisted. This time we're not just looking at the potential for optical rotation. We're looking for the specific patterns generated, the visual patterns, which can be used to say something about the structure of the material. So under PLM, you saw this kind of activity, which means there's some kind of optical anisotropy, which means there's some kind of structure there. Because pure liquid shouldn't be visible, not with these kinds of patterns under PLM. Question. Isotropic means completely the same structure throughout. You pass through that material in any direction and you encounter pretty much the same thing. So racemic? No. Racemic means you have a mixture that has equal proportions of enantiomers, which means it will act like it's isotropic. So that would still be an isotropic mixture, but isotropic mixtures you could also get from something like water that's not chiral at all. And as you pass through water in any direction, as you pass a light beam through it, doesn't matter which direction you pass through, you're going to get the same thing coming out. In some crystals, and this is why I want to bring one to show you this, you pass a light through, it'll sometimes get split into two light beams. So an example of this optical anisotropy. And sometimes you'll only get that split if you come at it at a particular angle. These kinds of things could be seen under polarized light microscopy. Liquid shouldn't do it, but this material does. And so the answer, what was thought was going on, is that this must be some kind of mesophase, something that's in between a solid and a liquid, something that has the ability to flow like a liquid does. Because after this first quote-unquote melt, you had a fluid, something that was not a solid, like a goo, you could say. And yet it had the structure of a crystal. So if it moved like a liquid, but had the structure of a crystal, that's where the term liquid crystal comes from. So that's a little bit about the history of the one of the early discoveries involving liquid crystals. Let me take some pictures here. Yes.
Or the structure of the cholesterol members.
Yes.
Is this two wedges or?
That's a wedge right there, and that's a double bond right there.
Oh.
So let me just summarize what I said here first about cholesterol motor state. A problem, if you want to express it that way. It appears to melt twice, and the first melt forms an optically active material under PLM. The solution. Is this idea of a liquid crystal phase. Liquid, which means that it's fluid, meaning it's mobile, and crystal, which means it has internal structure. And this other phrase, this other term I used is mesophase. Which is a phase in between a solid and liquid that has the properties of both. So what I'd like to do next is talk about some of the classes of liquid crystals, because from a very simplistic standpoint, there are two main categories. Those in which the type of phase formed by a liquid crystal is mainly temperature dependent, and then there are those that the form of a liquid crystal that exhibits, it depends on the concentration. So we have what are known as thermotropic liquid crystals and lyotropic liquid crystals. So liquid crystal family, again, the two main classifications, which there are others, The two I'm going to get to today are, what are known as thermotropic and then lyotropic liquor crystals. Thermotropic liquor crystals can be further divided into two subcategories. What are known as nematic and one that are known as smectic. Nematic comes from, I think it's nemata, which stands for thread, which represents the thread-like structures that are sometimes seen with those liquor crystals under PLM. And smectic is related to soap. So it's kind of strange that it has that term, because lyotropic liquor crystals are often made from soap molecules. But let me show you what's different between these different classes. So thermotropic liquor crystals. They change phase primarily based on temperature. They usually form an LC, a liquor crystal, without a solvent. What's the general structure of one of these liquid crystals? Well, let's see, I erased it from the board, but the cholesterol myristate had a long carboxylic acid tail that was very flexible in nature. It was long, but then it had the ability to wiggle around, and it had this multi-ring core. And that's the general shape of a thermotropic liquor crystal, because imagine that you've got this juxtaposition between the much more randomly oriented flexible tails that much more easily can slip past each other and start having liquid behavior versus these more rigid cores that are more likely to more efficiently stack with each other and stay crystalline in nature. And so this is what one way to generate this liquid crystal phase, to have the cores that are so attracted to each other that even as the rest of the compound melts, these try to maintain some spatial relationship with each other. But the more random wiggly chains do allow the compound to melt more easily. So it's caught in between the influences of these two parts of the molecule. Use an abbreviation that I've used much in the past, intermolecular forces. So these cores try to maintain order due to intermolecular forces. Yes?
Would that be a good analogy for what's happening in the cell membrane?
Gonna get there. Cell membranes are actually lyotropic. Phospholipids. Which let's remember from this morning's lecture. The most common one in humans versus bacteria is known as a lycopene, which is glycerol, where two of the OHs are attached to long-chain carboxylic acids. The last OH group is attached to a phosphate, which is attached to choline, which is a two-carbon amino alcohol. Because that has charge, There's a dichotomy of its phase compatibility, whether it wants to go into oil versus water phase. This doesn't involve phases. This involves just attractions between individual molecules. So the mechanism of forming a mesophase is a different type of thing in these type of lyotropic systems than you would have in the phospholipid bilayers, which are lyotropic. They're sensitive to concentration. So I'll get to those in a moment. Yes?
Which one is for LCD?
thermotropics tend to be, because you don't want something that is concentration dependent on something that you want to have long lasting. So let me make a comment here. But for the chains, not used to writing with chalk anymore. So the chains melt more easily since there's not as efficient packing. Or I'll say they're more flexible. Again, liquid crystal phases are generated in thermotropic liquid crystals due to the contrast of the flexibility of the cores and the order caused by the cores. The flexibility of the chains and the order caused by the cores. Now, as far as the different types of phases, the two main classes, thematic versus spectic, it's degrees of order. So in terms of order versus disorder, we go from a solid first to spectic phases. I'm going to talk about two kinds, spectic C and spectic A. They again go to thematic phases. And then to liquids. There can be multiple stopping off points depending on the type of crystal. There could be multiple transitions. If you're interested in liquid crystals, you can find out much more about specific examples. But let me show you the difference between three of these. So here's smectic C, smectic A, and then that. Pneumatic liquid crystals have a random arrangement in terms of layers. Like as you go through a material, there's no macroscopic order. However, if you notice, they all tend to have a certain slant to them, and they all seem to be pointed in one direction. So that average orientation is known as the director. You can have different domains. I should mention this term because it hopefully was something that you discussed when you talked about magnetism in 1C. So a domain is a region in space in which the molecules are all similarly aligned. So you can have, in a larger sample, you can have regions where the director is pointing one direction. You move to a small, just a little different place in the sample, the director is pointed somewhere else. But the thematic phases are characterized by having a director. The difference between a thematic phase and a spectic phase is that in the spectic phases, there'll be these rows that form. And they're not rigid, molecules can move between the different rows. Again, this is a liquid-like phase. There is fluidity. But they also self-organize into these strata. If you put even more order to it, you can have a smectic C phase in which the molecules all have a slant to them within each row. There's even a version of this that's often important in making materials called a chiral smectic C phase, where the rows, as you go from row to row to row, the director twists around like a helix, again, from one row to the next. If you have some kind of asymmetry in structure, if you have something that's a little bit different about it, then either through an electric field or a magnetic field, it gives you a grip on the molecule. So imagine that the cores of these liquid crystals, even in the nematic phase, had something that was sensitive to an electric or magnetic field. You apply a field, that means you can change the direction. You can move the director for that phase. Well, what if in one direction the liquid crystal phase is transparent? But because these are anisotropic materials, if you flipped it the other direction, maybe it becomes opaque, that light doesn't pass well through it. Or what if it changes colors as you flip them? Well, there's your basis for LCD technology, for display screens. You have these layers of liquid crystals that you apply electric currents, and they're being flipped around one direction or another. Of course, that brings up tons of design considerations. You know, what is the viscosity of this material that you're trying to flip the molecules around in? How much current does it take? Will that current itself cause a decomposition of the molecule? How long will these molecules persist in the whatever binding layers you use to trap them between these plates that end up being the screen? So there's a ton of design considerations. But there's our essential thermotropic liquid crystals. There are other subphases, as I've indicated, but this is more than you've probably ever heard about liquid crystals before. So good enough for an overview. Quick pause for questions, and then with what time I have left, I want to talk about the lyotropic liquid crystals. Yes? Oh, sorry. I left the other C on that. The difference between the C and the A, C has... molecules tilted within the layers. That's like another degree of order, and which makes it more like a solid. So the reason I listed these phases in the order I did is because if you had a liquid crystal that can exhibit all these different phases, and that's a huge issue in liquid crystal design. Aside from making a core that might be sensitive to magnetic or electric fields so that you can manipulate them, how does putting one more carbon affect the range of temperatures that liquid crystals can be seen at? And so by varying structure, maybe a smectic C won't appear for a particular molecule. Maybe an A phase won't appear. But if there are multiple phases, the C will be the one closer to solid, so it forms first because there's more order. The smectic A, since you lose that directionality, now the molecules across all layers are oriented the same way. That's less order. They're more similar, so that would form next. You lose the layers, and that just becomes a sea of molecules that are oriented one way. That's the smectic. And then when those molecules no longer have an average order, they're just randomly oriented, that's a normal liquid. So that's the difference between these phases. Now let's move to the lyotropic since we're running a little bit out of time. So lyotropics are liquid crystals that they change phase based on concentration. And let's take a phospholipid. as an example. I'll give you two different examples. This is ammonium palmitate. Palmitate is a 16 carbon carboxylic acid. If we take two of those and attach them to glycerol, yes.
Why is not NH4?
Because I can't count. Because I did this lecture this morning, and as I was giving the lecture, I was trying to memorize all these structures, like the cholesterol I wrote down. I just memorized a couple hours ago. And so I'm just tripping out on whether I'm counting my carbons correctly. Palmitate's 18?
No.
2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. 18. Oh, dear. There we go. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. 16. This is an example of a lipid. It's just a particular type of phospholipid. Now, here's how we're going to represent it. We have, this would correspond to the ionic head group. Because notice we do have something that's got charge on it. Ooh. Oh, that's something we don't get with the whiteboards, is it? Just the idea that I'm going to do this, kid, let's see who cringes. Oh, okay. There's always one. There's even the idea of I got...
Do it.
No, even just making the sound, which I guess I have allergies. Usually I can make that little squeak sound. That one. Sorry. That was not intentional.
Oh, man. It's a different color.
Can't see that one?
Can't see from much.
Oh, that works.
This one also doesn't squeak. Friction. So, but you can go find that out in your physics course. Here's that ionic portion of the molecule. Look at all this long organic tail group we have here. Are you all okay? Acting? Am I going to have to put the dunce caps on? Do you have your hall pass?
No.
Back to the main story. So, if we can reduce this... If we reduce this to having this hydrophobic group and this hydrophilic group, you know, I gave section one these terms already, but I'll say them aloud here. So hydrophobic means water fearing, which means something like this, that's nonpolar, that doesn't want to go into the water layer, versus hydrophilic, which is something like this, charged species, does want to go in the water layer. The molecule wants to do both, in fact. And so we call this type of molecule an amphiphile. Compatible with both polar and nonpolar phases. There's another term often conflated with this, which is surfactant. Which is, if you think of surface active, if you have the junction point between an organic and an aqueous phase, there's a word for that, not junction. Interface between those two phases, that's what these surfactants act at. Because, and I'm re-explaining, sorry, the morning section, one of the examples of something formed by surfactants, that's a micelle. So section two, has anybody heard of a micelle before? Okay, so what is a micelle? Maybe there's a repeat for section one. I'll go ahead and say the same thing here. That there's what's known as the critical micelle concentration. Which is the minimum amount of this surfactant, this amphiphile that you have to have around before it spontaneously starts forming these structures. Now, you might think about it that depending on how big these hydrophobic tails are, depending on how intense the charge is on this head group, depending on how small or large that head group is, if you change the physical parameters of this molecule, you know, what if you ended up with a tail group that was broad versus a tail group that was really narrow? How might that affect the packing of this molecule? So certain structural changes can change how much of you need to have around in order to make a micelle, or one of the other phases I'll show you momentarily. But once you get above a certain minimum concentration, the hydrophobic portions of the molecule, I have to say, this is in water. The only reason these micelles form is to minimize energy, to make it so that the organic bits dissolve in other organic bits, because that ends up being thermodynamically favorable. And then the water, the polar bits end up dissolving in the water. Because remember, at some point or another, we hopefully reviewed the fact that the reason that oil and water don't mix is entropy. Because it turns out to be entropically unfavorable because you end up organizing water. And so to keep the two separate, that's more thermodynamically favored. So like dissolves like is a thermodynamic process. So the organic bits try to find each other here because it's the majority of this is a water environment. That's why the organics get pushed to the inside. And the way that soaps like ammonium palmitate, that's a really rudimentary form of soap, because again, you have the nonpolar tail. But you have the ionic head group. So you add soap to a mixture, it forms in low concentration these micelles. Grease, fat, oil, whatever dissolves on the inside, then it gets carried away by water because the outside of that structure surface is hydrophilic. Now put more liquid crystal in though, and you can form a variety of other phases. There's the phospholipid bilayers, which I'll defer to talking about in the lab, because we did talk about those in section one in lab. It's an example, though, of something more generally that could be termed a lamellar phase. Which means that you get sheets of these liquid crystals where all the head groups will be oriented in one way, all the tail groups will be oriented in another, and you might get stacks of these sheets that form. Sometimes the layers will fold on top of themselves,
so that maybe you'll get head groups on either side of these layers. And so they're logically called bilayers.
These are the types of structures that phospholipids form that are found in membranes, which is why we care and even talk about phospholipids.
Besides the lamellar phases, you can have columnar phases, which look like this. That instead of a micelle, you have what looks like a micellar structure, except that it's extended into these indefinite length tubes. So imagine that the entire surface of this tube is hydrophilic and the inside is organic, hydrophobic. These tubes can then pack into cubic, which means square, or hexagonal phases,
which means it's like big long hexagons, which using X-ray you can prove these columns form.
You can also have inverse hexagonal. If your soap concentration gets high enough, where there's only a little bit of water, now the organic tails become the outside of these columns.
And so they'll still pack in a hexagonal fashion, but the main medium in between all of these will be an organic phase. All of these lyotropic liquid crystals are just liquid crystals, which means that they're mobile. But for all of these examples I've given today, what if you could polymerize these and lock in the structure? Well, there's lots of potential uses for that, but if I get the chance to this quarter, if I describe what I did in grad school, then you'll hear some of this one more time, because my work in grad school was to make these what are known as inverse hexagonal phases and polymerize them so that you can end up with composite materials. But we're out of time, so that's for a different lecture.